reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, second chapter of prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb, text number 28, which is their third shloka of their 16 shloka prayer. Satya, truth, second about the Adi Riksha. What's Adi Riksha mean? Tree, yeah, the original tree, which is what? Yeah. What is it?
Krishna?
No. No, material body. We're in here, huh? Remember the tree we counted? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 parts of the tree. 10. Counted up to 10. Anyway, we'll do that verse again, but now, text 28, this is about, we'll see. Translation. The efficient cause of this material world, manifested with its many varieties as the original tree, is you, O Lord. You are also the maintainer of this world, this material world, and after annihilation, you are the one in whom everything is conserved. Those who are covered by your external energy cannot see you behind this manifestation, but theirs is not the vision of learned devotees. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Various demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even Vishnu, are supposed to be the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this material world, but actually, they are not. The fact is that everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, manifested in varieties of energy. Ekam eva dityam brahma. There is no second existence. Those who are truly vipaschit, learned, are those who have reached the platform of understanding and observing the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any condition of life. Primanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santasya daiva hridayeshu valokiyanti. Brahma Samhita 5:38. Learned devotees accept even conditions of distress as representing the presence of the Supreme Lord. When a devotee is in distress, he sees that the Lord has appeared as distress, just to relieve or purify the devotee from the contamination of the material world. While one is within this material world, one is in various conditions, and therefore a devotee sees a condition of distress as but another feature of the Lord. Tate nukampam susamikshamanaha Bhagavatam 10:14:8. A devotee therefore regards distress as a great favor of the Lord, because he understands that he's being cleansed of contamination. Tesham aham samudarta mrityusam sara sagarat 12:7. The appearance of distress is a negative process, intending to give the devotee relief from this material world, which is called mrityu samsara, or the constant repetition of birth and death. To save a surrendered soul from repeated birth and death, the Lord purifies him of contamination by offering him a little distress. This cannot be understood by a non-devotee, but a devotee can see this because he is vipassacit, or learned. A non-devotee, therefore, is perturbed in distress, but a devotee welcomes distress as another feature of the Lord. Sarvam plavidam brahma. A devotee can actually see that there is only the Supreme Personality of Godhead and no second entity. Ekam eva dutiyam. There is only the Lord who presents himself in different energies. Persons who are not in real knowledge think that Brahma is the creator, Vishnu the maintainer, and Shiva the annihilator, and that the different demigods are intended to fulfill diverse purposes. Thus they create diverse purposes and worship various demigods to have these purposes fulfilled. Kamais taistaya hittagyana prapadyante anya devata. Devotee, however, knows that these various demigods are but different parts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that these parts need not be worshipped. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:23, Yepi Anya Devata Bhokta Yajante Shudayandita Tepi Mameva Konteya Yajanti Avidipurvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. There's no need to worship the demigods, for this is avidhi, not in order. Simply by surrendering oneself at the lotus feet of Krishna, one can completely discharge one's duties. There's no need to worship various deities or demigods. These various divinities are observed by the mudras, fools, who are bewildered by the three modes of material nature, tribir gunamayir bhavayar evi saravam idam jagat. Such fools cannot understand that the real source of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mohitam nabijanati mam ebya paramavyayam. Not being disturbed by the Lord's various features, one should concentrate upon and worship the Supreme Lord, mam ekam charanam paja. This should be the guiding principle of one's life. So here, this third text, tam eka evasya sita prasuttis tam sannidanam tam anugrahas cha tam mayaya sambhita chetsa tam pashanti nana navipaschito ye. The word tvam, meaning you, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times in this verse, huh? Tvameka, you alone. Tvameka, from you alone, proceeds this cosmic manifestation that we see around us. Tvam sannidhanam, and it comes back to rest in you, tvam anugrahascha, and the maintenance is also you alone. So those who are wise, those who are covered by your illusory energy, tvam mayaya samvritta chetasaha, whose those whose intelligence, who is covered by your illusory energy, they don't see Tvamaka, you alone. They see, it's right there, pasyanti nana. They see many things. Nana means all varieties of things. They see all kinds of stuff. So those who are covered by your illusory potency, although there's only you and nothing else going on. That's all that's happening here is you, period. There's no second thing. There's just you and nothing else. Those who are covered by your illusory energy, they see all these different things. But not vipaschitoye, but not those who are learned. They don't have this bewildering or bewildered vision of multiplicity. Well, here, there's two points that Prabhupada makes in the purport here about this seeing only Krishna and one concerns this nana, this word here, nana, the many varieties. So the first variety he talks about is various demigods beginning from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even Vishnu. There's three of them there, nana. So those who see in Maya see three independent or equal entities working. They see that Lord Brahma creates and Lord Vishnu maintains and Lord Shiva destroys. But actually it is Krishna who creates through the agency of Brahma. It is Krishna who maintains through the agency of Vishnu, and it is Krishna who destroys, operating in the guise of Lord Shiva. So all these three states that are mentioned here, tameka evascha satapasuktistam saninam dinam tam anugrahascha. So these three things are mentioned, creation, maintenance, and destruction, in the first line here. These are the absolute truth, is that by whom everything is created. By whom everything, from whom everything comes, by whom everything is maintained, and in whom everything is conserved at the time of dissolution. This is definition. What is Brahma? Janmadasya yataha. That from which comes janma, etc. Janma asya. Janma and everything else means these three things. Janma means creation, and in the etc. means maintenance and destruction. That's the absolute truth. So here he cites the slogan. Define another place from the Upanishad, the Shruti Mantra. Ekam eva advitiyam Brahma. Brahman is one, indeed, advitiya, and there is no second thing. One without a second. The famous definition of the absolute truth. You'll find it also independently, at least apparently independently, come up with in the West. Once the idea of the absolute is there, well, what does the word absolute mean? It's contrasted to relative. It's like we have in family life our relatives, those things, those ones to whom we are particularly related. So therefore the absolute is that which has no relatives, or nothing to whom He is related. Therefore, ekam evadvitiya brahma. One without a second. From this little idea, you can then deduce Mayavad philosophy, which is what's commonly done. Then how can God be an individual? If the absolute truth is an individual, and there are other individuals like you and me, or a creation, if there's God and God's creation, then he's relative. So there isn't any creation, not really. You may think there is, but that's because you're an illusion, and when the illusion is over, the creation disappears from view, and then there's just, well, you can't talk about it because there's this advaya gyan, this non-dual knowledge, which means that you disappear, the object of knowledge disappears, and just merge, right? Because that's what's really there, is ekam eva advitiya, one without a second. So that means, what does it mean? You're God too, right? There's no second. This is all the things that are deduced from this erroneously. Well, here Prabhupada quotes it, ekam eva advitiyam brahma. There is no second existence, he says it. But somehow or other, we don't end up with Mayavad philosophy. Why is that? Because the misunderstanding is thinking that the energies of Krishna are something else, and therefore compromise his unity. They don't. There is Krishna and Krishna's energies, but they are all the energies is you also. That's what they're saying. So when you're seeing these energies or these various manifestations, Krishna can exhibit himself in various manifestations, yet he remains one without a second because these various manifestations are just different manifestations of him. So we do not have separate vision. It is those who are ignorant that have separate vision. Oh, here is something, this is not brought about by Krishna. This is a big mistake. There are many gods. They all have to be worshipped separately for their different fulfillment of necessities in various departmental divisions. So I've got to carry on, touch base everywhere. So he says, ekam eva advitiya brahma. There's no second existence. Those who are truly learned, they've seen this. Okay, the second point, that's the first point, which Prabhupada returns to in the second part of the purport. Second point of how a devotee sees Krishna in everything is that they accept even conditions of distress as representing the presence of the Supreme Lord. That's his idea. Because usually the world is, we already understood there's two kinds of dvipala, two fruits on the tree. One is sweet and one is bitter. So people would like to say that the sweet fruit comes from God and the bitter fruit is... Well, that's not. Something went wrong somewhere. Or, of course, sometimes they think God is evil. I mean, somehow or other people could get God into the law courts. Just imagine the litigation. Huh? How many people would sue? So These are the dualities, happiness and distress. So it is said over and over in the Bhagavad Gita that a wise person, a devotee, sees happiness and distress as the same. So here Prabhupada gives a clue how he sees them as the same. They are equally the mercy of the Lord. Even the devotees recognize that, but they still say to Krishna, please, don't teach me. What do they say? I don't want any heavy mercy. But if we actually recognize it as mercy, we say, yes, it's good. So he sees it as good. So there's no good or bad for the devotee. Everything is good because everything is Krishna. He sees it all as coming from Krishna. So how is that? The condition of distress is there to relieve or purify the devotee from the contamination of the material world. Once one has become a devotee, one does not undergo the ordinary conditions of material life. So if there is suffering comes, this is not anymore simply the reaction of sinful activities in the past. Because that does not act to separate you from Krishna. It acts to bring you closer to Krishna. So it acts in a different way. So therefore, it's not the external potency, it's the internal potency. Now here's the verse. Tateinu kampam samikshamano bumjana evatmakatam vipakam ridbhavapur viddanin viddan namaste jivetayo mukti pode sadaya paha. Prabhupada quotes this verse many times. This verse is Brahma's verse. He prayed to Krishna. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Srila Swami explains in his commentary on this verse that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word, anyone who lives in this way, just repeatedly offering you obeisances with his hrit, vak, and bapu. Hrit means his mind or heart. Vak means words, and bapu means body. Hrit, vak, bapu. The three. Hrit, vak, bapu. These three. Offering to, unto you. With those three, he offers namaste. That's what it is. Namaste. That person has become the rightful heir. See, this word dayabhak is actually a Sanskrit legal term. So it refers to that person who is the rightful heir to property. This person is Dayabhak. He is the one who is legally entitled to inherit father's property, I don't know what the English exact technical word is. It's the heir, the rightful heir. So this person has become the rightful heir, Muktipad, to the position of Mukti. So here's the qualification. So one should just say, when Krishna is bestowing his mercy on me, now I may be in a condition of suffering. So the devotee thinks, oh, this is just a little slap on the wrist compared to what I have coming to me from all my past sinful activities. This is a token punishment. I accept it. So here Prabhupada explains the word susamikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. In other words, actually what's happened is the devotee's sinful reactions are finished. But still, there is something in the mind which is still the propensity, maybe in the future, to commit some other sinful activity. Maybe the haunting notion that there might be some place in the material world that's nice. For example. And so Krishna sees that and say, here may be the seeds of future trouble. So if this thinks that the material world may be nice, let me just give him a little illustration of what the material world is like. So it looks like a sinful reaction, but actually it's not. The cause is not your past sins. The cause is Krishna. That's what he's saying here. So he says, giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation. So anyway, let me say a devotee, when he sees these comings, he's saying, oh, here's Krishna. This is from Krishna. He doesn't have a separate vision. You see. Here's Krishna, and he could have stopped it, and he didn't, or he should have stopped it, and he won't, something like that. No, you see, I accept this is Krishna as much as anything else. This is a manifestation of Krishna. How does Prabhupada say in this verse? A devotee sees a condition of distress as but another feature of the Lord. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord. And therefore the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. So we're the ones that have to drop it, our material world. So we should not, we've still got some fond hope here, somewhere over the rainbow. it's the enjoying spirit, he says. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words, and body, Hrit-bhag-bhapu. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God. See, it's a dayabhag, legitimate son of God. The illegitimate sons, you know, they're the ones that, they're not dayabhag, they can't inherit. So this is why he uses this word, legitimate son of God. Nowadays, of course, in modern times, we have no such distinction, but that used to be such a difference. He certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the words Daiva. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the supreme pure Lord Krishna without undergoing a rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. Well, that's what he says about that. So here, Prabhupada quotes this verse, how we have this vision, ekam eva avidya. So this is also the personal attention of Krishna. A non-devotee is perturbed by in distress, but a devotee welcomes distress as another feature of the Lord. Well, certainly we see the principle that sometimes medical treatment is a little distress to avoid a bigger distress, because often medical treatment is distressful. It's like when you get inoculated against a disease, that inoculation, you get a flu shot, for example, you get a little flu. And that way you avoid the big flu. The inoculation is discovered for smallpox, you got a disease called cowpox. So you ran a fever and you suffered a few days, and then you got better. And that way you avoided getting smallpox, which you mostly died. And if you lived, you had your whole face pitted with scars and everything. You know. So sometimes there's little uncomfortableness given by medical treatment, which avoids the much worse fate. And so, in the same way, the Lord purifies the devotee of contamination by offering him a little distress. So that's the two ways. One should not think that there are many gods. There's only one God, Krishna. And that one Krishna, he may act through various agents and energies and so on to get different things done. But it is only Krishna. And therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, this is what someone, the same is there in the Bhagavad Gita, huh? Bahunam janmanam ante jnanam mam prapadyate. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sadurlabaha. This describes a person, this paschit person, vispachitaha, one who is wise. So in this, in the Bhagavad Gita verse, he's called Gyanavan. He has gyan, knowledge. The suffix van means a possessor. It's like we say Bhagavan, one who has bhag, opulence. So Gyanavan, one who has jnana, knowledge. So he gains that knowledge, bahunam janmanam, ante, at the end of many births. It is not instantaneous. The gradual process, and then he becomes Gyanavan. Krishna says, mam prapadyate, he surrenders to me. Why does he surrender to Krishna? Vasudeva sarva. His vision is, his realization is, Vasudeva, which is Krishna, is sarva, is everything. In other words, ekam eva advitiya. Or savaklam klav idam brahma. There is nothing but Brahma or Krishna. So, Vasudeva or Krishna is everything. That's samahatma sudurlabha. But this such a great soul is a endangered species. Rare. So then later on in the same chapter, having described Gyanavan, then he says, Kamais Taistaya Hrittagyana. Then talking about somebody who's called Hrittagyana. Not Gyanavan, but Hrittagyana, whose jnana is taken away by varieties of kama, different sorts of desires. Papadyante, they surrender. The earlier verse said, Gyanavam mam prapadyate. He, same word, prapadyate, papadyante. I mean, third person singular, third person plural. Gyanavam mam prapadyate. One who is Gyanavan, he surrenders to me. But Ritta Gyana, prapadyante, anya devata, to other deities. So nothing could be clearer, you would think. Krishna is saying, one who is wise surrenders to me, saying, there's nothing but Krishna. And he worships Krishna alone, but those who are minds are bewildered, distracted by various desires, they surrender to other gods. And Krishna says, then he quotes here in the 23, those who are worshipping those other devatas, actually it's intended for me, but they're really worshipping me because there's nothing but Krishna, so you worship them, but they're representatives of Krishna, so you're worshipping Krishna. But it's worship, that worship is adhidipurvakam, which means out of order. It's not really vidhi means rule, so adhidipurvakam means in violation of the correct procedure. Now, Prabhupada has explained adhidipurvakam. He's given the example that because they can say, yes, well then, if they're worshipping the devatas and they're Krishna's representatives, so then you're worshipping Krishna, what are you complaining about? And he says, avidipurvakam. Just like I have to worship the spiritual master, and so as part of that worship, I can touch my spiritual master's person. The correct procedure is I touch his feet. Now, if I say, oh, I'm given a license, I can touch the person of my spiritual master, and I go and I put my hands on his head, that is avidipurvakam. I can say I've touched my spiritual master. It's true, you have. But your method is avidipurvakam. This is Prabhupada's example. So in the same way, this worship of Krishna by means of worshipping devatas is avidhi purvakam. Better, you just worship Krishna. That is what Krishna says. And the devatas, they're automatically more than satisfied. Any questions?
Maybe you elaborate a little bit. The point I found very nice was when you were speaking about the wise devotee, how he would see Krishna in these different ways and suffering, and they all coming, everything else coming from Krishna. But the thing that I found most amazing is that it's the process which enables us to become wise, that we actually have to go through the process in order to realize these things. Mm-hmm. They're in your books, but it seems that you still have to go through that process.
Yep. Otherwise, there won't be any realization. That's why the verse says you have to be constantly namaste with Rit Bhagavatam. That means, Prabhupada says it like that. He says, one has, this is like a person in order, a legitimate son in order to get the inheritance of the father. All he's got to do is stay alive. Right? Somehow he can keep on breathing. And that's your only qualification. If you're alive, then you get it, you know? So in the same way, he says, one simply has to remain alive in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada says here. You have to remain alive in Krishna consciousness. What is that? He says, following the regular principles of bhakti yoga. Then automatically one becomes eligible. You become the legitimate son of Krishna. He says, this, I recognize this one. Krishna conscious means Krishna. Yeah, look at the Govindam prayers. They talk about all those different things, including Lord Brahma. And each one ends, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajantam. Doesn't it? No? It's Govindam. Yeah.
In the Bhagavad it says that Shiva, Brahma, and Vishnu consider them gods.
Mm-hmm.
But according to all the Shastra, otherwise we also Krishna and Vishnu as equal. We worship.
Mm. So, but Vishnu is sometimes counted among the demigods because they see like that. In other words, somebody who's a Mayavadi, he will see Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva as is equal and independent manifestations, and they'll treat him like a devata. So if you worship him that way, you worship him in a similar. You're not worshiping him as the supreme personality of Godhead. And even for Krishna consciousness, we have to see Vishnu properly. Diparacharyeva hidashantarama vipecha dipayate ruttahetu samana dharma tagraheva javishnu chayari bhakti govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. We have to also see where he comes from.